The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Today, over 200 survivors will gather at Auschwitz to commemorate the 75th anniversary of its liberation, reminding and, of course, urging the world to never forget the horrors of the Holocaust. On the line now from Stuttgart is a man whose mission is to do just that, despite his own difficult past and the sins of his notorious grandfather. Rainer Huss, good morning to you.
Good morning, to be invited here.
Could you begin by telling us straight up who you are and your link to German history?
I'm the grandson of Rudolf Höss, who was the former and founder of the Auschwitz extermination camp in 1940. So he was responsible for more than 1.3 million killings in that camp.
It's an extraordinary opening gambit to a conversation. I don't know where to begin in some ways, but perhaps you could tell us as much as you know about, and as much as we know, about your grandfather.
Yeah, so he runs the Auschwitz extermination camp. So when he went there, it was only some few barracks from the soldiers left out of the First World War. And then he creates it out of 25,000 square meters, a size of 93 square kilometers. Mm-hmm. And he became a famous person. I know it's not the right term to say a famous person, but in history or in what we educate today, he organized the industrial plan and fulfilled final solution for the Nazis in the way that he used the Cyclone B to gas people in a short period. So, and his name became, in a way, in the Nazi regime, a high level about the Hungarian solution in 1944, when he killed in 56 days more than 400,000 people by gas.
I want to talk about your father. He was born in 1937, one of five children who grew up in the large villa near Auschwitz. I saw it last month. It's so close to the camp, it's beyond understanding until you see it, I suppose, in some ways. Can you, from your study of history and from visiting the camp and so forth, tell our listeners, please, Rainer, about the villa and life in the villa?
So my grandfather went over the first time to Auschwitz, or today called Oswiecim, to visit it and to find out what he can do for the final solution. And it was planned on the beginning to become an agriculture system to feed all the soldiers who overruns the East. And he occupied that villa, and I'm in touch with the daughter. So that means that the original owner of that villa, she is now in her, a little bit older than her 80s. Mm-hmm. It was the first time a Höss after the war visited that villa again. So I jumped in, and for me it was important to see, well, it was all that kind of denying all the time and glorification about my grandfather, what my father really saw in that period. So when I went in and opened the window, and I saw everything. I saw the gas chamber, I saw the crematoria, I saw the hanging spots. So if people not were there, so you saw everything. So how can a kid grow up in that environment with activities around? And then I spoke to people like Joseph Paczynski. He was the barber of my grandfather, and asked him if there were walls around when he came to Auschwitz in 1940. He said no, everything was open. So the walls were built up in 1941. So and the kids, they had signs around their neck with the names on it, so that they not get mixed up with any transports from different countries with Jews or prisoners, at all. So, and the kids, they grow up in an environment where they have everything. They have ponds, they have different animals. And what was really specific, like the saying of my grandmother, that she said to the kids with the greenhouses, so before you eat the vegetables or the fruits, you have to wash it while it's full of ash. So there was one really pregnant thing in that way. So you were there, I know it. And it's nearly 100 meters away from the crematoria. Mm-hmm. And you said, sometimes it was really strange when all the black smoke came over, and it was a disgusting smelling, so about burning human flesh. but she called that part paradise. And that was one of my major questions in my research. If she called it her paradise, how must hell look for her in that way?
Extraordinary description, to be honest with you. I'm flabbergasted, but this is what why this conversation is so important, to remind ourselves of just how dark that period of history was. When did you discover, as the grandson, how old were you when you got an indication as to who your grandfather was?
It's several steps. So the first time I realized, I came close to that name, Rudolf Höss, was in a boarding school. Yeah, as a kid, you a little bit, make troubles. So we did that as well with my roommates, and we stole food in the kitchen. We're caught, sent to the director, and have to get that, became like a delinquent for him and have to work in the garden with the gardener. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't know in that moment was that he was a prisoner in the villa of my grandfather of 30 of other prisoners. So when he saw that name on the list, which was given by the secretary to him, that he knows which kids he has. So he saw that name and he called back and said, okay, can you tell me what's the name of his father, of that kid? And she said immediately, it's Hans-Jürgen. So, and then it was clear, I'm one of her siblings. So now revenge took place in my life.
Really?
And I had no clue about Rudolf Höss, about concentration camps, Nazi regimes. It was not taught in my age in that year or in that period.
I think it was books in your house that alerted you to more information.
Yeah, that comes. That was the second step. So to finish, the first step was after we were sentenced for 2 weeks to work with a gardener. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for over 3 months. And always with these sayings, you're not good enough, you work not good enough, you have not enough patience and things like that. So, and my German teacher took me out of that course of trouble and said, okay, a few days later, are you interested to visit with me a concentration camp like Dachau? So I had no clue about a concentration camp. For me, it was important. Well, he offered me to go there with his motorbike. Mm-hmm. So that was more important for me in my age, in between 10 and 11. So we went there, and if you visit Dachau first time, so you go enter by the gate, you enter and go in. And then you have these barracks around, and everywhere was these blocks in these, showed Rudolf Höss, worst criminal in the 20th century, responsible for millions of killings. So, of course, I was a little bit shocked. So then we went back home. And immediately I called my father and asked him how that guy belongs to us, if it's part of our family. And he said, no, it's a spelling mistake. It should called Rudolf Hess with E, not with that umlaut we have in Germany, like they always the 2 points on it. Mm. So then the situation was cleared up for me in that moment. Then I started my training as a cook, came home, and that was in an age of 15. And my mom had the hallway filled up with bookshelves, so she reads a lot. And then I went up to put my dirty gloves away, and I saw these two books, The Commandant of Auschwitz, Memoirs of Rudolf Höss, and the other one was People in Auschwitz from Hermann Langbein, a survivor. So the first thing which runs through my mind was, wow, they made a spelling mistake again. So from Hess to Höss. Mm-hmm. So how can that happen? And before I could grab these books out of the shelf, my father was next to me, and he, believe me, he was not really a sports guy in his life, and got slapped left and right, and then it was clear something went wrong. I went down to my mom and asked her and said, what means all of it? And he said, okay, your dad is leaving for a business meeting, and then you will get these books. And exactly what she did. She gave me the books. I read both books. I was completely shocked what happened to the family and that everybody is denying it. And then I left my home in an age of 15.
And you were trying to, I suspect, process the magnitude of what you had learned. How did you do that? How did you feel knowing the bloodline?
I think it starts really, in some ways difficult and cruelty for me. I started with alcohol and drugs, and I was really a brutal guy in my youth. Mm-hmm. So whenever somebody came along and only looks on the wrong side on me, he gets slapped. Mm. So I was really not that nice kid anymore. And then I became a father in the age of 17. And this again turns my life completely around. So it was clear I have to take a stand now for my family. And I started researching with it. And another point, my mentor in the job where I became a cook, he was a kid out of the Lebensborn. I think the translated a bit means a breeder home of the Nazis. Blonde and blue-eyed kids generated by blunt couples.
Yes.
So the kid was taken away and grown up isolated. So, and he was one of these Lebensborn kids. So he knows everything about my name and what happens to the in the Nazi regime with my family, with his family. So, and he helped me a lot in the first years to grow and to get as much as possible information about my grandfather. So, and that became in some ways really, yeah, I would call myself addicted to history now.
I understand that. Did you, at the young age of 17, did you find, Reiner, that having a family was critical to your story, to have a family of your own?
It's difficult as well to explain. Well, it's like a drop-by-drop system over years now. My family itself, so my own family, I think they were my life. They keep me alive. If I would stay longer in the Höss family, they would really poison my brain with all that indoctrination of it. So I was happy to get out of it. And then I became the black sheep in my family.
Can you understand, Reiner, why your father and his siblings claimed they did not know what was happening in the camp, despite the description you've just given us of proximity, smells, environment, etc.?
I think that belongs to my grandmother. So my grandfather wrote his memoirs, which, and I say it right now, I wrote a book about it. The second book with 1,600 pages where I clean up the lines completely from his birth until his end. And there were a lot of lies in it, which he wrote himself. So like he testified, he was a soldier in the First World War. That's a big lie. And a lot of other things which became more and more interesting in public. But for the kids itself, I think it's a kind of indoctrination they had out of that Nazi period. So they grow up in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw that now many times. So I'm in touch with several afterborn Nazis like Niklas Funk. His father was a general governor in occupied Poland, and he creates the ghettos there. So, and they all have in some ways the same ideology inherited. So you cannot get them out. And what I found out as well is the third generation is that generation who deals with it, has to deal with it. The impact on my father and his sisters, I think it's so high. And as well that my grandmother never moved away a step. She glorified my grandfather until her suicide in 1989. She committed suicide in Washington, D.C., and now she is buried on a Jewish cemetery under her kid name, Hensel. So that is something which I really cannot stand at the moment, that she is buried there.
You described growing up as home being hell on earth. Why was that, Reiner?
I think that belongs as well to my father. But after my research, I found out that my grandfather never slept his kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he really, they had a beloved childhood. So, and then he asked myself why he slept us. Mm-hmm. What was that turning point in his life that he became that brutal guy, that his only communication system was his 120 meter long brown leather belt to explain things to us? I don't really have a clue why it happens. And I never spoke to him since 1985. And I will not speak to anybody of the Höss family anymore. It's really, that's past for me, that family.
Why?
I cannot live with that nonsense that he never made anything wrong. That it was okay and he was not a commandant of an extermination camp. He was a commandant of a prison. So how can I deny things like that? And in all that research I made, I found the names which were really close to my family, like Professor Fourisson, one of the biggest Holocaust deniers in the world. And I found blogs where he mentioned my aunt in America who delivered images and said, no, nothing happens. Mm-hmm. And he said they had enough food, nothing went wrong, so they never get beaten up. Everything was really beautiful for these for these persons. Yeah, but they were in prison, they make something wrong.
Why did you keep your grandfather's name when a lot of people might have said it's time to change it?
What would you would you invite me to your show if I would call myself Mr. Müller?
No,
I don't think so.
No, I probably wouldn't know who you are. But you make a good point.
Yeah, but if I use my family name, I have no problem with it. I never made anything wrong in the Second World War. I was not even born in it. But to use it as a tool and as a good weapon against the far right and all these revisionists, racists, that's the point in it.
It is the point. I understand that entirely. You've been in touch with, you're still in touch with the 176 survivors of the Holocaust all over the world. And you made a very, very curious point, which was that children of survivors are more belligerent towards you than the survivors.
I tried. In some ways, in my research, I looked for a way not to glorify my grandfather as well, but to get in touch with survivors. And two really interesting persons I'm in such a close contact to was Eva Moses Kors. She passed away last year on her trip to Auschwitz when she was there with different people to give a tour. She adopted me in 2014. And she said, okay, Rudolf Höss cannot enjoy his grandson, but I can. And you need a grandmother. So now it's good you have a Jewish grandmother. And Ben Lesser, he reads an article about me in the Wall Street Journal, 2015. Mm-hmm. And he was shaking in fear when he reads the name Höss again. He said, oh, God. So, and he gave and said to his daughter, Gail, you have to find that young man. So he reads the article to the end and said, oh, he's doing exactly the same what I'm doing. So we have to find him. I have to talk to him. And that happens a day later. We were in touch and we're still in touch. We share a lot of projects together. We go together in schools. And I think that's the way of changing things. In Germany, I saw that many times that people are not really able to understand what it means that a Holocaust survivor and the grandson of his tormentor stand together on stage and give a testimony out, which I never saw before in the world in that way. So it's a huge impact.
And Rainer, can I ask you in conclusion, what do you see as the most important lesson for listeners to this program, for students who go to your talks and so on? What do you want them to take away from what you have to say?
So first of all, I have one sentence I always use in schools. Be a voice, not an echo. So not take a stand with thousands of others. Go your own way. Make your research. Ask your questions. When you're not really believing it, don't follow the masses. And like you have right now in England, where thousands of people follow the message and they believe in all these lies. So it becomes a Brexit. If they wouldn't believe in it, if they would question it, that never would happen. And that's what I deliver to the students. Open, go in life with open eyes. Well, with closed eyes, it's easy living. Not look around, not take care about people around, like the refugees, migrants. These people are all human beings. And nobody really asked that question as well. Why we have refugees? Why they are coming to our countries? They not want to come. Of course not. But they have to. Well, we deliver weapons and we not really take care to take the goods and all that stuff out of their country without looking about them. Mm. And on the end, we have a war, another war. And it's going on and on and on.
Rainer, it's been extraordinary talking to you. I hope you'll come and see us the next time you might be in Ireland and we'll have a longer conversation.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, I'd like that very much. Yeah, it's been really good to talk to you. Thank you for your time this morning. Wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you kindly. Bye-bye for now. Rainer Huss there joining us on the show this morning, and what a fascinating story he has to tell. We appreciate him telling it so well for us today. Right, the text number is 51551.